In this week's episode, I'm joined by AIA CEO Damien Mew. I've always been a person that watched Damien from afar and have really enjoyed his progressive thinking and attitude, but have had the opportunity over recent months to work more closely with him and see that firsthand. In the podcast, we talk about multicultural Australia and growing up in a loving household who welcomed anybody in. We talk about Damien's passion for AFL and how the dream was always to be an AFL player. Now, that dream may not have come true, but his impact on the industry has been there. We talk about his career journey and how he landed at AIA. We talk about his love and passion for AIA Vitality and making Australia a healthy and better place. To me, the passion that he shows is why he sits in the role as a CEO and why he has those leadership skills. I enjoyed hearing about his history with his grandmother and hearing how he feels that she was the one that developed those leadership skills early. She took the risk with her family to bring them to Australia to lead to that better life, and Damien wants to repay that to the community around him. I have a lot of respect for Damien and really enjoyed our chat, and I hope you do too. Damien, welcome to the Cough and Bond podcast.
Okay, thank you, Jamie. Thanks for having me. Great to be here.
Mate, I'm going to be really excited about listening to this today because there's a lot to go through, and where I wanted to start off, as I was saying, I really like to start off with people's childhood and sort of see their growth and where they've come to. But the other part we'll touch on today is your work with AIA and AIA Vitality. I was doing a little bit of research before this and knowing that you were part of that core team that brought out Vitality and seeing the amazing work that you guys are doing these days and how much it's grown since I first joined the industry. You know, when I first seen Vitality to where it is today is, you know, there's a power of work that's gone into that. So really keen to also explore that with you.
Absolutely, looking forward to it. And Vitality's 10 years this year, so we're celebrating 10 years of AIA Vitality's birthday.
I love that, congratulations. But mate, let's start with your childhood. You know, the first thing, I recently met your mother. We were in an event and she was wonderful and also met your family, which was quite nice. But mother half is Sri Lankan and then your father half Burmese, half Chinese. You're really growing up in a multicultural household, aren't you?
It was. I was a bit confused growing up. What do I say I am, actually? You know, it all starts with your childhood. And I call out from the start, I was born and blessed in Aussie, but also blessed to have a fantastic childhood with a very diverse background. You know, sometimes you don't appreciate a lot of those things till later in life. But yes, my father was half Chinese, half Burmese, and my mother's Sri Lankan, so I'm a bit of a bitzer. I say I don't come with any papers, you know, I can bring plenty to the kitchen table.
What was childhood like for you then, growing up with such a multicultural family and you know, being in Australia? You know, I've read an article recently that there were hard times at school. So what was it like growing up?
Yeah, as I say, I look back and I was blessed because I had a lot of love and care and great role models growing up. So, you know, when I grew up, we grew up in the same house. You know, we had my grandmother, who I've spoken about many times, who I realised later on in life was my actual hero and started me on the journey of leadership without even realising it. But also with my mum, my dad, my aunts and my uncle. So my aunt, I called Mim because it sounded like mum, because I just didn't know. You, as a kid, you know, you have this beautiful privilege of not knowing what you don't know. And so what you have and see around you is your world. And it's not until later in when you get out of the house and start to interact with others outside your family that you start to recognise differences and realise certain things that take away that beautiful ignorance, I guess, that you know, you have as a child. So, you know, for me, we were all in the one house, and everyone was working towards a common goal, which is where I say, you know, I learnt that lesson about leadership and my grandmother being my hero, who left Sri Lanka and brought my family out here. She had a very affluent lifestyle back there, but she, you know, and she wasn't working, and she, you know, had help and all those other things as you do in some third world countries. And but she knew that things were changing, and it, you know, to give our family a chance at a better life, she left my grandfather and brought my mum and my aunt and my dad and uncle out here. My grandfather and she was in her 40s and ended up working in a factory out in Dandenong for the next 25 years, which I step back and go, how could that have been? You know, here's this wonderful woman who, you know, hadn't worked before, comes to a strange country, gets up at 4:45 in the morning in the dark, gets on a train and goes out to Dandenong from Clayton and works in this factory and then comes home and just through action rather than words, played that role model for us. And all she wanted was for our family to have a better life. And then I remember after working all week, not complaining, no complaints, just hard work. If there was overtime, she was doing it. And they loved her at the factory because she was such a hard worker.
Yeah, I can imagine.
But, you know, even in one incident, she chopped off part of her finger, but she was back again. That didn't stop her. But all she wanted was on Sunday for all of us to come home for lunch.
Yeah.
And in this unit, you know, there's the family. By this time, more kids are coming along and, you know, we just get in there and it must have been the loudest unit in that complex because it would be arguing away. But all she wanted to do was cook for us and to see us ungrateful kids eating while she sat quietly on the couch and observed what she had built. And, you know, that's why I say I reflected on it later, and because what she taught me was purpose and how you put purpose into action. But I was blessed to have my dad, you know, my stepfather came along and my uncle and my aunt and my mum, and they all work jobs, you know, different jobs, yep. Morning jobs, night jobs, study during the day. So I learnt the lesson of hard work.
Study, was that obviously a big part in education in your family?
Yeah, it was, that they wanted me to be well-educated and their kids to be well-educated. Of course, they had good education too in Sri Lanka, knew it was important, but really giving us the chance to have an education in this blessed country in Australia was a big deal.
Yeah.
But, you know, I remember, you know, my dad himself, stepfather and dad, he would study at night to get his accounting degree. Then, you know, during the morning he'd be doing a cleaning job, and then during the day he'd work, you know, at the Hawthorne Institute of Education. And, you know, I remember, you know, complaining and crying about having to get up and help him with the cleaning some days as a kid in primary school. You know, like, no, I don't want to.
Well, you can see he's still hard working. We were having a beer the other week with him, and he goes, well, I'm not retiring anytime soon.
No, he's a great success story of what can happen in this awesome country of ours, you know. Started out that way, but then ended up starting his own, you know, worked at Toyota and other places in the finance areas, and then ended up opening up his own tax business. And,
yep.
Still at it, run that and still going. So yeah, it was great. But you know, I think I think that accepting diversity and seeing different things around me meant that when I got to school, everyone was different, was normal.
Yeah.
But it wasn't until you sort of, as you and I've talked about, start to realise one day, not everyone accepts difference the same way. I always make the joke, I didn't realise I wasn't white until I was 10.
Yeah.
And it was the story of when, you know, I'm sitting with some kids at school and they're making fun of someone else who hadn't integrated as well into their new country. And I realised, hang on a second, they look like me.
that would have been a different realisation for a 10-year-old as well.
It was, but I was trying to work, you know, and I was trying to work through it. And I guess what... I worked through was, you know, it was just the differences in how I had grown up from, I was lucky to have been here from the day I was born.
Yeah.
And going to school with those same kids from day one. And so they didn't see the difference. I did put it down to my family. We were very generous and accepting.
Yeah.
You couldn't come to my home or my grandma's home and not leave
with food
before eating or drinking. You know what it's like. And so I think I also did that, but I really also learned to be part of a team.
Yeah.
So all these lessons, you talk about being a leader later in life or running a business, these lessons were lessons I didn't know were happening. Hard work, team first, purpose, action. You know, those amazing things.
So you get into later years in school, you've learned all those lessons as a young child and, you know, you sound like you've got a great group of friends as well. You know, there's some testing times within there. But, you know, what did you want to be when you left school? What was the aspirations as a young kid?
Man, I clearly wanted to be an AFL footballer. Yeah, yeah. Still talk about it.
Yeah, tick.
Still tried. Yeah. Did I mention I won a grand final 2 years at Diamond Valley 2 years ago?
Hey, I'm a premiership player too. Yeah. I normally don't say the league that I've worked on.
No, you know, I'm still living there. Now I'm living vicariously through Kai's footy games every Sunday, my son, and Bailey in a netball. But, I wanted to be an AFL footballer. But actually, my dream was, I also came from an interesting background where my family back in Sri Lanka had a lot of restaurants.
Yep.
And I loved it because I loved food and I loved the way the whole service element. And so, you know, that side of my family is quite entrepreneurial. So I did like the business aspect of things.
Yep.
And so at this stage growing up, you know, I didn't quite know exactly what I wanted to be besides playing AFL and sport. I wanted to be, this is going to sound funny, but because I was so connected to family and friends, I wanted to, whatever it was, I wanted to be rich enough to buy a street so all my family could live in one street.
I used to think that with my friends. Like, yeah. Guys, we'll all just buy together.
It's going to be so easy. In my mind, that works so well. No one else shared that dream.
I reckon I've said that to mine in probably later years when it was getting a bit old to say that. And I was shattered. I see now... the street I've recently moved, but our street had a street party the other day that we missed out on. And I was shattered because I was like, that's cool. Like, they're all getting together as a community.
It's just unfortunately no one, and probably in hindsight, in a bit of space doesn't hurt. Now, but that was it. And but look, you know, I didn't want to jump, you know, we jumped to that. And you know, the AFL was an interesting space. Again, that's a good, it's funny how things have changed, right? You just sort of accept things in your environment, you know, as I said, like as a child, you don't know what you don't know. Similarly, as you grow up, sometimes what you see, you assimilate to, and you know, that's another area where I didn't have anywhere near some of the, you know, the difficult challenges you've seen in the press for some who have gone through football and had to face from a racism perspective. But you know, I just thought it was. Didn't really realise when I was playing, even like under 9s, 11s, you know, parents more than kids, you know, shouting out, call me Big M or Dim Sim or something, you know, like it just wasn't okay, but you just sort of get on with it and think.
It's a good change that's happening at the moment.
Phenomenal change. I'm all for it. And that's why, you know, the work that you and I talk about around the importance of multiculturalism and diversity and inclusion is so important, mate. We have to continue on that journey all the way.
Like a big part of me around this sort of the themes that we talk around is how you were talking about your family. This is a big part I see about football and bringing players from different cultures and bringing people. I grew up in a, you know, country community, and it was all about your parents there, you know, your mum helping out, your dad helping out, you know, your grandparents down watching, and it created a community. To me, you know, you talk about your upbringing. If that can be revolved around football clubs, that's what's special about them. And it's bringing in other families. And I think if that can be replicated and people who are only arriving to Australia can see it through that lens and not just see it through the past and see it through a chasing a ball around, that's where I think the power can happen.
Absolutely. I think sport is a great place for all to come and create a common connection, whether it's supporting, whether it's playing, you know, it doesn't have to, or you know, and
helping out in the canteen,
cheering, being part of it, as you know, being a volunteer, doing the running, you know, I'm the runner on the Sunday for my kids, the parents are right into it, it brings us all together. Sometimes we're a bit too competitive, so we need to, you know, recognise that it's about having fun first before winning. But I think sport is one. The other one I'd say is work.
Yeah.
You know, we got to be careful. You know, sporting clubs get a lot more attention in media, but workplaces are where people spend a majority of their time.
Yeah.
And it doesn't, you know, it doesn't get as publicised, but it can happen just, you know, these things are happening in the workplace. So we have to walk the talk in our own organisations. And it doesn't matter, Jamie, if you've got five people, two people in the team, or a couple of thousand. You know, we have to be able to make it a safe environment for people to talk about it. And, you know, you and I touched on another thing that's really important. It isn't about telling people how good and right you are. It's about listening and respecting one another and learning.
Yeah.
Most of the issues that we hear in the space of discrimination and race are not intentional. There is intentional.
Yeah.
Hatred out there, unfortunately.
We've seen recently with Eddie Betts.
Which, you know, is sad. But many you talk to will tell you that have been on the other side receiving and say, oh, it wasn't actually intentional, but they just don't know.
Yeah.
So I think we need to help people to feel safe that, you know, it's not actually about right or wrong in terms of, you know, if you're not sure, ask, talk, let's put these things on the table and learn from each other. And what a great way to pass down cultures by sharing stories.
100%, 100% great. I love the dream of AFL, and this is going to lead into sort of part of our conversation with the work that you're doing at AIA. Mm. But, you know, I won't touch on too much of your work history, but, you know, financial services, you know, what did you study at uni? You know, what was the pathway that you sort of decided to take post the AFL dream maybe not coming true?
The AFL dream it was a dream. And they say only 2% of people achieve their dream. If I'd known the formula back then, maybe I would have. And, you know, I always tell people, you don't be put off by the 2%. No. Learn from the 2%.
Yeah.
And what do the 2% do? They have a dream. They believe in it more than anyone else, because people will tell you why you can't, including yourself. The biggest person that will tell you you can't have your dream is yourself. So, second part is you've got to have a plan and set goals, short goals, to get there. Because there's no sort of, you know, unfortunately, I haven't found the genie lantern with Aladdin in it, or I Dream of Genie bottle hasn't come up on the beach yet. And the third part then is, once you've got the plan with the small steps to get there, you've got to get on with the work.
Yeah.
Now, it's easy for me to say I would never have made it, but actually, yeah, maybe I could have made it if I had, you know, just put in the effort to learn to kick better on both sides, with both feet. Learned to be, you know, that my skill wasn't going to be taking pack marks, but how could I read the packs better to make sure that if it fell to ground, I was there to get it. So do you know what I mean? It's those little things. So I think easy for me to joke about it now and say, oh, yeah, I never would have made it. But did I actually
give it a
put
crack.
The plan in place to try and get there?
I don't think if you told a 12-year-old me, I wasn't going to listen to that. No. But you're right in hindsight, aren't you?
Yeah, like, no, well, I had the dream, but I didn't really have the belief and the work plan to get there. Sorry, the plan and goals to get there. I just went out there and thought if I, you know, played as hard as I could, and somehow it would work magically. So, you know, I went to, did the right thing and went to school and went on to uni. And I just wanted to do something in business, as I mentioned before. Yep. So I ended up doing a Bachelor of Accounting and Computing degree. I thought computing was Excel.
No.
Because I was good at doing it at some back then in the day.
Things on Excel. Tell you what, good degree to have behind you now, though.
Oh, it would have been phenomenal. But the problem is I was completely illiterate when it came to the computing side of it, because they started talking in binary numbers of 1 and 0 and code. And I'm like, give me my Excel sheet.
Yeah.
So anyway, I did the accounting part. And Jamie, I had a really interesting time, because I went from being very successful, you know, good at my grades at school, super disciplined and hardworking, to not dealing with the freedom of university, where I only had like 16 hours of contact hours. And so at that time, I was also doing a cleaning job and working in my uncle's cleaning company that happened to be cleaning a few nightclubs and bars and other things. And so you sort of get exposed to a different life. It wasn't the cleaning, it was the hanging out during the day at the bars, and like the night scene, working in them, from cleaning them to working in them, and then, you know,
drinking
that sort of stuff.
Them.
Oh yeah, I wasn't a big drinker back then.
Yeah, okay.
But I was enjoying you know, a whole new world. And so uni for me, without contact hours, I'd get up early, get all my classes to be at like the 9 o'clock lectures, get to uni at 7 to use the gym at Monash, then have a good chat with everyone beforehand, but then not go to the class. But I don't know why. I was just like, you know, I just couldn't handle this freedom. Like, I was like
still rocking up but not actually attending class.
Yeah, and so surprisingly, I failed a number of classes, and the best one was I failed contract law, which was the open book. And because
I agree. I failed contract law as well, because my friend had given me his flowcharts the year before.
Really? I'm like, how good are these?
Same thing. This was early on in my uni days. Didn't turn up, and then realised, thought, open book, I'm going to smash this. Read the first question, I was like, oh, I'm in some trouble here.
Well, actually, I did the most ironic thing. I broke the law. I basically plagiarised the book. So halfway through, I thought, I'm gunning up, put my hand up and ask for another booklet, because back then you had to write in the booklets. And instead of actually, you know, looking at the question and trying to get the principle and the whatever behind, you know, Donahue and Stevenson and, you know, the snail and the... I basically just rewrote the textbook, so I'm not surprised I failed. But look, that was a good lesson.
Yeah.
You know, tasting a bit of failure, Realizing you know that it does take work, because everything up until that point I had worked hard for.
Yep.
So I buckled down. I was working a lot around it, whether it was Mr. Muffler and my uncles on a Saturday changing mufflers and brakes, or whether it was working the cleaning jobs, or working and studying. But I started in the mailroom, mate, at Colonial. That was my, after getting my degree.
I love that. And, you know, I know that you worked for a few different financial services companies on that, but joined in 2007, you joined AIA?
Yes.
Correct. What was your first role at AIA?
My first role at AIA was a decent role. I was head of group distribution. I just finished helping to put Australian Super together.
Yep.
With some great people, who were there for a long time. Ian Silk was the CEO, Mark Delaney was the CEO of the other fund. And I ran the operations for a couple of years before, you know, handing over the keys of the operations to someone else and going to AIG at the time, AIA. And that was really because, there was an opportunity, a phenomenal experience. It was another example of having a purpose and putting great people to work together. Our purpose was to, you know, we rallied to make it all happen in a very short time.
Yep.
And it was a big merge and big transition and very exciting. I was behind the scenes with putting the operations together, the teams together, the implementation of the systems, processes, da-da-da. But we all rallied around this real belief that we were helping to create this super fund to help Australians have the dream of this wonderful retirement. And that kept us going. And we were working 24/7, sleeping in the sick bay, you know, whatever, to make it work. But, yeah, came across to AIG at the time. So it was AIA, then AIG, and then back to AIA after the GFC, and was head of group distribution. And that was, again, I can't tell you there was anything magical about it. It was a very similar sort of blueprint for me. It was, you know, one, taking those lessons I talked about, being able to be fortunate enough to be able to move into roles where, at that time, AIA was pretty small. We were about $170 million in premium. We grew it to $2 billion organically from 2007 to 12, fastest growing life company. Started group insurance first, where my superannuation background came into play. And then started a couple of years later, went into that journey from 2007, the retail IFA business. We grew that quickly because, you know, again, was able to bring back some of my experience from Colonial and the advisor world. But all of that aside, all it was just really about, when, for me, first and foremost, bringing a service ethos to any business that I was running with.
Bringing back to that family restaurant business.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And so, and then the most important things right through my career was, you know, being able to have a genuine purpose that we could connect to, creating a compelling vision, and then inspiring people to want to work together to deliver on it. So it's just building, Simon Sinek talks about it as the why, what, and how, and I really believe in that simple model. As cliche as it might be, the why is so important. It's what harnesses and brings everyone together and helps us to put in that discretionary effort. Having clarity around what we wanted to be, and we wanted to be the ball girls and the ball boys of the life insurance industry. You know, with the advisor of the super fund and their member or their advisor and their client was, you know,
the star tennis player.
The star player. that was the game. And we wanted to be like those awesome ball girls and ball boys for 3 hours who just watch relentlessly for any ball to drop, get in and get out, clear it, and let the main game get on with it. And that endeared us to, as a starting point, to differentiate ourselves. And then the rest was just then how we really developed a simple rally around being the best in life, and then evolving that to a purpose around making a difference.
Well, let's talk about that purpose. Mm. And you're on the team, and I'd love to hear about it. Start. We were just talking. So it's 10 years of Vitality.
Yeah.
So AIA Vitality. Yeah. Where did that concept start? I know you're on the team that developed it. Mm. And to be honest, we've sort of just listened to your background and your childhood and your passions, and I can see where it's come from.
Yeah.
It's interesting. You can definitely see where it's come from. But talk to me about where did the idea come from, start? Was it on a whiteboard? Were you sitting around having a beer, a coffee?
Yeah. Jamie, I mean, it's a great story, but I can't claim developing it.
Yeah.
I was just an amazing believer in it.
Yeah.
So Adrian Gore, along with a number of colleagues, who are still there today, Barry Schwartzberg, in South Africa, There's a whole.
They're on the forefront of insurance, aren't they?
So they recognised that there was a need to change, and what there was, you know, how do we actually move from sick care to healthcare, and how do we, you know, if we want to insure everyone, how do we help them try and prevent?
Yeah.
And so they built Vitality, which was the first of it's around positive selection by helping people and incentivizing them to know about their health, improve their health and reward their health. The whole behavioral economics machine working, not a rewards program, a behavioral economics machine around education, which we all know is the great unlock once you're aware about something, but then it's not enough. There's barriers. So how do you remove those barriers so people can actually not only know about it, but do something? And then, you know, like anything in human nature, people start something and sort of get off the treadmill at some point. How do you keep incentivizing them to keep going? So when I heard about Vitality, you know, I'd moved in, I was like, you know, this is amazing. I want to be part of the team at AIA that brings it to the markets and implements it. And it was game changing. And, you know, we were able to build rather than say, oh, what's the next product or the next system we're going to implement or application, electronic application, we wanted to build a value proposition around life, health and well-being.
Yeah.
I thought life was going to be pretty important in 100 years. Health would be, and so would well-being. Well, this is in 14. Along comes COVID, and we were well ahead of our time. But I do feel like we genuinely, our dream was to champion Australia to be the healthiest nation in the world.
Yep.
And to provide a, not leveraging the Vitality platform, tailor it for the Australian market, learn from everything that Discovery had done brilliantly, but then, you know, culturally adapted into the Australian market. And that was a transformational effort around helping to look and see that, you know, if we could help people make changes around the 5-5-90, the five modifiable lifestyle behaviours that lead to five of the non-communicable diseases that cause 90% of deaths in Australia, we could provide the framework on how you could achieve that. Now, it's 63% deaths worldwide. And that's because some countries struggle for healthcare, water, food.
Yeah.
So we've got the settings, as is lifestyle behaviours that could help change that. So that really was energising, and it was really about how we could make a difference in people's lives and champion what I believe is the great Australian dream. So this was like, I wouldn't, and I'd talk to anyone who would listen to me in government or anywhere in the world. But because people used to say it was owning your own home in Australia. And that's a great dream. But why did you want to own your own home in Australia? Because we're blessed in this wonderful country of ours. And what we really want to do is to be able to have a home. Yes, that's a goal. But enjoy this wonderful land and the family and friends we have in it. And that's where you get the good old classic Barbie.
Well, I think even just a younger generation of Australia is changing as well. You know, we laugh about the sort of smashed Avo comments and things like that. But we are trying to be more connected in that regard. We want to enjoy the things we can in life. And, you know, we have learned to work hard, save hard. And the Australian dream is to buy that home. And I still think that is an Australian dream.
It is a dream, absolutely.
But I do think there's other things in life. And we're seeing fitness at the moment really come back.
Well, you can come at it the other way, Jamie. What's robbing us from having that dream is, you know, people might be living longer, but not healthier.
Yeah.
And not in a state they can enjoy it. So you might have the house, but can you enjoy the house?
Yeah.
Right? How long can you stay in the house once you bought it and own it?
Yeah.
After you've paid it off for years and years and years. So, you know, this is all linked in, and that financial well-being equation is really important. How do we enable that? So Vitality's been a phenomenal journey, and, you know, that is across, though, let's be really clear. It's, you know, we talk about sport, but it's actually the five pillars are move well, which is that physical activity, because we know movement is important, whether it's just, you know, the steps we take or getting up and standing up from the desk. Eat well, because nutrition is important. What you put into your body makes a difference.
Yep.
It's important. And it's not about fad diets. It's just about knowing what you're putting in. Think well is the most important pillar. That's the mental well-being one.
And there's been a lot of work that you guys have done on that. And most recently, you know, as I was sort of talking about catching up with your stepdad and things like that, you guys are a big supporter of the Danny Frawley. Yeah. Do you want to talk a little bit about that and what brought you to sort of be involved there?
You can't champion a dream and to be the healthiest nation in the world if you don't address the barriers to getting there.
Yep.
And sadly, So look, you know, just quickly, plan well, the other one, because as I said, you can't get there if you don't plan well. And then the environment is the one we added. It used to be 4,490, and we added the environment.
Oh, yeah.
And the fifth one was mental health, because these were the things that were causing premature deaths,
yep,
and inability for people to have a healthier life, longer, better life. So when we looked at it, you know, as an insurer, we were seeing mental health claims were growing 20% year on year.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It was 25% of claims from people under 25 were for mental health. You know, we're an insurer that paid $2.1 billion of claims last year. We see the detrimental impact of, obviously, you know, we, and so we do a lot of work in the area of all of the causes. I mean, so we do a lot in the area of cancer to support, but cancer had a lot more existing frameworks. So, yep, you know, we support Breast Cancer Australia with Mother's Day Classic, screening, we give lots of points, we really incentivize people to learn more because there's so many good things that have happened there. We're a founding member of the OCA, Club 1054, which is the Ovarian Cancer Research Foundation. And then there's musculoskeletal pain revolution and others. But mental health, the reason we, you know, felt like we were sitting at the table and a lot of people were talking about it from different groups and stakeholder parts and lots of fingers being pointed at each other. And I sat back and I go, oh my gosh, hang on, can I just ask a question here? Are we not all joined by a common purpose, and have we recognised that? Because our common purpose is we want Australians to be healthy and to, you know, recover from mental health issues or prevent mental health issues. We don't want one in two Australians to suffer a mental health issue. So if we've got a common purpose and we want to help them live a healthier life, how about we start pooling our resources? I also put my hand up, so we do not have the answers.
Yeah.
Right? But we're not going to have the answers by just
sitting back and
waiting. So action. So we deliberately decided to take a very authentic and honest opinion. So we conducted the largest study into, people said we know the data, we conducted the largest global study into mental health with Quantium, which we commissioned and did, and used 11 bits of health data globally to try and identify were there controllable factors and causes, and yes, there was. There might have been intuitive, but now at least we have data to evidence it and prove it. Doesn't prevent it, but it means we can start to look at interventions. So for example, someone who averages 7 hours sleep a night someone who averages less than 5 hours sleep a night versus someone who averages more than 7 hours is twice as more likely to have a mental health issue. Those that have more than 2 sugary drinks a day are 3 times more likely than those that have 1 or none.
Yeah.
So they were just basic things, sleep, and then of course steps. You know, those that average, and again, you know, you've got to be really careful because not everyone can walk. So, you know, I want to be careful when we just say, but like the, one of the things was those that did do more than 7,500 steps a day versus those that did less than 2,500 steps a day. And the big difference in the, were 3 or 4 times more likely to have a mental health issue. But again, managing your mental health is just like your physical health, right? You people get up and do that. But, you know, this is a world where the rate of change, information, complexity and adaptation is putting so much weight on us, our mental health.
Yeah.
Health. We need to look after it.
Feels like there's a lot more information out there, but there's also a lot more sort of points that are stressing us.
Yeah.
In the way we're connected on social media, it's a really good way to connect with people, but it's also bringing some negatives along with it as
Absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely. And look, and you have to be authentic. I was not a good example to people. I've talked about that. I didn't realise that, you know, I talk about leadership being a privilege and a responsibility and honouring that first before anything else. If you want to try and even be half a decent leader, it's not an authority or position. But I didn't realise in saying that, but actually people were looking to me sometimes. You know, the younger person who just joined the organisation, and what they were seeing was this person who was saying, yeah, I've done 152 flights a year, average 3 or 4 hours sleep a night, da 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 da, how good am I? Not in a bragging mode, but just not realising by saying those things. So guess what? They think they have to average 3 or 4 hours sleep a night to work 24/7, 255. Like, what they didn't see was Friday night, coming back from Sydney, I'm just like in the airport going, oh, please just get me home. I can't go.
Yeah. You know,
coming home and trying to juggle being a dad, and partner, yeah, like dad, son. Like I was just not wrecked. Doing a great job everywhere. And I thought I was being present, and people said, you're not being present. We would like to have you here for a minute, you know. But the kids are a good wake-up call on that. And thankfully, you know, I was able to share with people. Then there were tools that I brought into my daily routines to help me manage them.
What are some of those tools that you're now using?
Oh, look, I you know, having some sort of exercise is really important. Some sort of prayer meditation for me is really important. You know, people can call it whatever they like. I respect everyone's beliefs and cultures. But so I'm not a great meditator where I can do an hour or anything like that, but I can, I also feel really lucky. I can have really quick mindfulness moments by just quick mindfulness activities that can help me get my breathing back and remove what is a stressful feeling and energy in my body.
Yep.
You know, I discovered that during COVID and the fact that there are trees all around us that I didn't realize that I was too busy running and driving past until I had to walk
every single day.
Yeah.
You really start to notice.
So that's part of an important part of my routine. Then it's acknowledging things like bringing reflection into my life. So we carry a lot of stuff around, and I talk about going on a date with yourself. Stumbled upon that one accidentally many years ago, instead of going to a client, cancelled the event, stopped off and had a $18.50 pad thai and glass of red wine in 25 minutes. Felt very guilty for not going home, but it was probably the most therapeutic time where I tasted food. And then all of a sudden, after I got over myself thinking everyone was looking at me in the restaurant of two other people on a date who were not interested in me at all, gosh, we carry a lot around as humans.
Yeah.
And I just reflected and just, oh wow, and all these things came into my head that I was carrying around about interactions in my head or things I hadn't closed off, and I just dropped them, and I was like lighter than ever. So I think, you know, it doesn't have to be a meal. Instead of going to, you know, have a coffee with yourself, instead of getting the takeaway cup and then rushing back to the office, or tea or whatever it is, water, sit down for 5 minutes and just be with yourself. And then last one, Jamie, and it's different for everyone, but you know, just acknowledging your feelings. I used to think it was not appropriate to, you know, share that to yourself. I wouldn't let myself believe it was like kryptonite to me. Oh, I might be tired or overwhelmed or stressed because that would be whatever.
Just push through.
Yeah,
push
so
through.
Now it's just like have my little pity party. Yeah. It's imaginary cupcake. I pull it out of my pocket and, you know, I'm feeling a bit tired or whatever. I allow myself to feel it and then go acknowledge it and then go have a little pity party to me.
By making these changes, have you felt like you've become a better father, better partner, better leader, all of that, once you sort of realised those changes and implemented them?
I don't think I'm in the... I would hope so.
Yeah.
I'm not the right person to ask. You know, it's the people out there that I'm engaging with that probably are the best people to ask for that. But I don't, you know, beat myself up on not getting it right. I just try to do better each day. And so, yeah, I wouldn't be the right person to ask because, you know, the ones that leadership is about impact, fatherhood is about impact. Am I having the impact? Only they can answer.
Well, mate, from what I've seen and observed and talked to a lot of people, I definitely think you're making that impact.
Oh, thank you. No, but you are too, mate. I think we all are. And, yeah, I just want to be do my part on the journey.
Damien, mate, I really appreciate you coming in and especially coming into the office today, taking the time. So, you know, it's one that I've really enjoyed and hearing your story has been fantastic. So, once again, mate, really appreciate you jumping on.
No, thank you, Jamie, and appreciate you having me on. And let's play role reversal and I get to interview you and hear your story. I know a little bit about it, but I want to hear more, and I'm sure everyone would love to as well.
Love to. Thanks, Damien.
Cool. Thanks.
Coughlin Bond Podcast is a product from Coughlin Bond & Co., which we are an authorised representative of Cairn Financial. All information in this podcast is for education and entertainment purposes only. It is not intended as a substitute for professional finance, legal or tax advice. The hosts of the Coughlin Bond Podcast are not aware of your personal financial circumstances. Before making any financial decision, you should read the product disclosure statement and, if necessary, consult a licensed financial professional. Do not take financial advice from the podcast. For more information, head to the disclaimer page on the Coffin Pond website, or you can find resources on the ASIC website and find a registered financial professional near you. In the spirit of reconciliation, Coffin Bond & Co. and the host of the Coffin Bond podcast acknowledge the traditional custodians of the country throughout Australia and their connections to land, sea and community. We pay our respects to their elders past, present and extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people today.